Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Bill Ryder on CBS Sports Radio.
Good morning. Welcome into the show. Bill Ryder with you on this Wednesday. Filling in for Jim, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Whether you want to buy a home or refinance your current home, Rocket can. Appreciate you listening here on the show at Jim Rome, jimrome.com. You can hit me up too, Sports Writer, Sports R-E-I-T-E-R. I was up late last night watching America. It's nice to see the United States of America's basketball team look like the United States of America's basketball team. If only we could play Iran every single game. Dominated that Iran team. We'll talk Olympics 20 minutes from now. I can't. I'm just going to be honest. That's all the enthusiasm trying to channel some patriotism I've been able to summon for these Olympic Games. We'll talk about that in 20 minutes. Hit some NBA draft. Xavier Howard is angry and frustrated and feels like he's not getting what he is worth. Howard, excuse me. Down in Miami, we'll talk about the business of sports and the fact they don't love you back. Ask Kendall Graveman, just got traded from the Mariners, was in tears when he found out the news. Jim Bowden, longtime GM, will be on the show. Jeff Goodman will be on the program, talk some draft with us, and get into Brady Papinga. I'd love to start in a more lighthearted way, crack some jokes, get after somebody. We'll hit Aaron Rodgers, too. But we're going to begin with Simone Biles. And I hope that in talking about literally the greatest gymnast in the history of the sport, the greatest American Olympian, or at least one of them, in the history of the modern Olympics, I present the kind of sensitivity and nuance that is necessary without sugarcoating the fact that in sports, in competition, in high-pressure, high-leverage situations, pressure's part of the deal. And if you missed the news, Simone Biles did not have a good performance in the team portion of the competition on the vault. And she made the decision to withdraw from that part of the competition. And in doing that, let it be known, we'll play the sound here in a little bit, that it wasn't a physical ailment that required her to walk away from the opportunity to help her team achieve gold, which they did not do. It wasn't any kind of injury. It was the stress and the mental fatigue. And the news just an hour ago, she is also withdrawing from the rest of the Olympics, from the individual all around. Now, this is Tiger Woods pulling out of the Masters in his prime on a Saturday while the favorite. This is LeBron James in game 5 or 6 of an NBA Finals announcing that the pressure and the stress has gotten to him. And let me start here. I have utter sympathy for Simone Biles. And I think the notion or the criticism that she's weak or there's something morally wrong with her or we should load up any kind of vile response is stupid and misplaced. It's wrong. But, and there's a but here, my sympathy for that stress, the recognition and understanding that depression, mental illness, anxiety, and wherever this falls is real. The fact is that one of the reasons that we watch sports, one of the things that's compelling about them, is the degree to which pressure and the ability to overcome it or be broken by it is great theater. I watched Tiger Woods, especially when he was Tiger Woods, to see whether or not wearing red on a Sunday, he could break mentally the competitors he played against. I watched the NBA and the NFL in large part to see whether or not anyone has the mental toughness and fortitude to beat back LeBron James, Michael Jordan back in the day, Tom Brady. And we've talked so much about Aaron Rodgers, and we'll do it later in the show. I'm sure there was pressure on Aaron Rodgers when he was at Lambeau in that NFC Championship game against Tom Brady and the Bucks. And I'm sure that pressure and his inability to handle it played a part in the fact that the Packers lost that game. And we got to all the drama that we're involved in now. And so with all respect to Simone Biles and understanding those people who rightfully are rallying around her, and do it, go for it. Rally around her. I think we all should. But to dismiss the idea that there's nothing to see here, to pretend that it's not the Olympic Games and that pressure isn't part of the actual reality and fabric of what makes this interesting is silly. If I can quote The Godfather, because why wouldn't you? This is the business they've chosen. Imagine if LeBron James, and I already referenced this, just decided, think about the criticism we would heap on LeBron James. Michael Corleone, The Godfather, chose a career, chose a life of pressure. You don't like that the five families are coming after you? You should have done something else for a living. Or take a more real life in a serious profession. A heart surgeon, a brain surgeon, I'm sure feels massive pressure. And I would never disrespect or not take seriously the anxiety and the stress and the mental toll of what that must be like to have people's lives literally in your hand. But that's the job that you have. My cousin, Ryan, who I love, who served this country in Afghanistan and in Iraq, has made the decision upon coming back from serving his country abroad to serve his country here by training and joining a group of men and women who are fighting firefighters on the West Coast, including Oregon. And he would tell you, I would imagine, that pressure's part of the deal. You can't separate the hazard from the job in those jobs that bring about massive amounts of stress. My point is this. It is okay that she decided to walk away. It's not a moral failing, because failing at sports isn't any kind of judgment morally. But she still failed. She still couldn't handle the pressure. And that is something worth talking about and remembering. There can be, even though we don't do this very often in this country, a middle ground between it's totally acceptable that she walked away and no one's allowed to bring up the fact that, you know, that's part of sports and therefore she let her team down, which by the way, she did. And that's okay, too. People miss shots all the time. People overthrow receivers all the time. And she's this awful person. How dare she? And I'll give her credit. I'm not sleeping on the pressure. Covered gymnastics in 2012 London Olympics, Gabby Douglas and that incredible group of women who took home gold for America. And I didn't realize until I started covering that sport, maybe more than any other sport on earth, and I mean that because they're kids when they start, and the space between each level, right, Olympian, non-Olympian, alternate, is minuscule. Pressure is baked into the job. Pressure is part of the deal. And that's true before you actually are the sport. The thing about Simone Biles that is utterly fascinating, that is incredibly, incredibly interesting to me, is that she is USA Gymnastics. She is International Gymnastics. She has literally invented routines that 12 years ago people thought were physically impossible. And I'll give her more credit. She came out, she talked to the media, she was honest, she was candid. And that takes some guts. And that's a pro. I'll let her speak for herself here for a moment. Yesterday, Simone Biles, in pulling out of the Olympics, yesterday it was simply is not the right term, but it was pulling out of the team competition. Today, the announcement, she will also not compete in the all-around, which is the individual events for which she qualified for all of them, which in and of itself is remarkable. Simone Biles yesterday did explain her decision.
No injury, thankfully, and that's why I took a step back, because I didn't want to do something silly out there and get injured. So I thought it was best if these girls took over and did the rest of the job, which they absolutely did. They're Olympic silver medalists now, and they should be really proud of themselves for how well they did last minute having to go in.
All right, let's give it some context. I don't want to pretend out of sensitivity for Simone Biles while I still want to be really sensitive to Simone Biles. It's been a really long time in international top competition for women's gymnastics that the United States has not won. And so the notion of being proud of the women for getting silver, I understand on its face, it's a disappointment. It is considered in the gymnastics community a failure. And for the young lady who had to go in and compete immediately without having to warm up, that's a difficult spot to be in. Again, both of the following statements are true, and I mean them both equally. Simone Biles failed at her sport yesterday. And that's okay. It's okay. You can miss a shot. It doesn't make you a bad person. You can throw three interceptions in an NFC Championship game. It doesn't make you a failure as a human being or no longer a Hall of Famer. And you can find a moment, having defined your sport in a way that's never been true before for Simone Biles, having become and earned the monikers, the greatest gymnast in the history of a sport that is as pressure-packed as anything, you can find a moment where you go before those bright and brutal lights, having done it so many times before, and for whatever reason, there are no fans in Tokyo. There's no doubt that's significant. The weight of the world feels heavier for all of us in little ways in this brutal last year. I'm sure that is enhanced for someone like Simone Biles. And just the reality that you're out there, because you're not just competing if you're Simone Biles or any of these Olympians. You're not just competing for yourself. You're competing for your country. And an event like yesterday's, you're competing for a team and a group. And the weight of that is real. And the pressure of that is real. And for Simone Biles to walk out, and in that moment, under those lights, to look up and to feel a burden for the first time in her life that she just didn't, she felt like she could not meet, it's okay. But it's not okay because it's a success or we should pretend that it's a success. It's okay because it's okay to fail. It's okay to come up short. We don't usually think of it in those terms in sports. And if we're being really honest, it's not okay in the moment, right? It's the term okay. It's not a success. This isn't tiddlywinks. And I don't mean that to sound disrespectful. There are some professions, there are some things in life where if you can't handle the pressure, there are consequences. And not even serious things. Politicians. I think we would all agree, we probably, most of us don't root for very many of those. If you get to a point where you have so much anxiety, you can't give a speech at the Republican or Democratic National Convention, you can't campaign anymore, but that's part of being human. It doesn't mean that you're automatically allowed to be considered this incredible politician and get into office. Competition's part of the deal. Pressure's part of the deal. So it's both for me. I feel really bad for Simone Biles. I have deep sympathy, and I pass no judgment on her like a lot of people have on Twitter. I mean, just this, the vile, awful, ugly, racist, stupid garbage. Please delete your account. However, right, there's middle grounds here. The people, and there's a lot of them that I work with and respect and know, are saying any criticism of Simone Biles, any suggestion that she failed, any suggestion that this was some kind of letdown makes you a bad person. I didn't make up the rules in gymnastics. I'm not the person who decided in sports we should keep score, but that's how it works. It's a literal competition. I really, really, really feel for her. But I also feel for every one of those gymnasts who counted on her to try and bring home gold for Team USA. Not because she let them down on purpose, but because she let them down in a way that's totally acceptable and part of the deal. People fall. People stumble in gymnastics. People fail in sports. It happens. It happens. Devin Booker, if I can give a recent sports example, had the ball in the NBA Finals with a chance to really capture that series. And he literally lost the ball to Drew Holiday and literally lost the series. And it spoke to him, a lot of pressure that got to him over the course of the NBA Finals. Does that make him a bad person? No. Does that justify a bunch of racist or hateful garbage to Devin Booker? Of course not. No. Does that make him some kind of long-term failure of a human being or basketball player? No. Did the pressure get to him? Is it part of the reason the Bucks won? Is that a failure by him in the sense of competing in sports? Is that germane to the conversation when we talk about sports? Yes. Yes. I'm not going to shy away, neither should you, from the difficult conversations. The talk about mental illness in this country should not be mental illness happens, let's not talk about it or pretend it doesn't have an impact. It should be this. Stress, anxiety, fear. It's part of the deal. And it sometimes stops people from being successful, achieving their goals, achieving the goals we've set for them or ourselves. That's the deal. It's not a lifelong scarlet letter, but it's part of the story. And let me add this too. And I hope it doesn't come off that I'm making light of Simone Biles' situation. But for those of us that work for a living and are not in the 1%, I mean, she's beyond the 1% of the 1%. For those of us that are not the greatest of all time at what we do, and I'm not including, you know, I know Garrett Ritt with the whole chocolate thing would make an argument.
Game on.
Or whichever one of you came up with Count Chocula for Tom DiBenedetto, who's not here today, which is one of the greatest things I've ever heard. Most of us are, you know, okay to not very good to fine at what we do. Yet the joke, sports writer, sports, R-E-I-T-E-R, I know I'm the worst. Fill in, I got it. Just put him right there. I'll check it out later. But most of us still have to go to work. I have loved ones and friends who have had panic attacks on the way to their everyday jobs. And you know what they do? So they can keep those jobs, they go to the job. It's part of the deal. Doesn't mean that Simone Biles should get extra criticism, but I think it's also worth noting how fortunate for her that this happened to her when she was already the greatest gymnast of all time, already a multi-time gold medalist Olympian, already, I would imagine, a very wealthy woman who's earned that money. Because there are athletes who this happens to when they're 11 and 14 and 17 and 23 in the case of sports where you don't peak as early as you do in gymnastics. So yes, it's a huge story. And Simone Biles, like everyone who struggles with these things, and she's not alone. It's great that it's no, and I think it's brave of her to talk about, and I love what that has to feel like and do for people who have real anxiety in situations where they can't just decide, I'm not going to do it. But it's also a sports failure, which is okay. It's such a harsh word, right? But sports are literally defined by who wins and who loses. That's what it is. And so for me, both things are true. Simone Biles was not able to handle the pressure by her own words. And in sports, that's a significant thing if we talk about the sport. And it's okay. People fail. But I'm not going to sit here and pretend that she's some kind of bad person. And I'm not going to pretend that yesterday and today, she's in this context, in these 48 hours, a raging success story. She's a human being, an athlete who couldn't handle the pressure. And that's worth talking about. And that's tough. And I feel for her. All right, Jim Rome Show here. Bill Ryder filling in at Jim Rome, jimrome.com. Sports Ryder, Sports, R-E-I-T-E-R, if you want to hit me up. I don't know what else possibly could have happened that we would have opened the show or any show with gymnastics. And I covered gymnastics. That was a weird experience. I didn't know anything about it. All right, we'll talk some more Olympics. I was forced to stay up and watch USA versus Iran yesterday. So we'll talk about that. And a tennis player arguing he's going to die on the tennis court. I might die. Just finish your tennis match. We'll do that next year on the Jim Rome Show.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
All right, welcome back into the Jim Rome Show. I'm Bill Ryder. What's up? 1-800-636-8686. Sports Ryder, Sports, R-E-I-T-E-R, at Jim Rome on Twitter, jimrome.com. It's time to ask the pros, where you, the clones, get to ask us a question, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Go to cbssportsradio.com/askthepros and submit your question. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. I cannot get into these Olympics. I know I'm supposed to, right? Is that one of the obligations as either a sports show host or someone listening to this music or someone who just loves his country? Can't do it. Trying. What's that Russian guy's name? Daniel Medvedev? Is that his name? Medvedev? The tennis player? I mean, I actually shouldn't make light of it because apparently one of the women competing got rolled off the court in a wheelchair because she got heat stroke. Hey! People that run the Olympics, you greedy hypocrites. If the players ask you to play at night because it's 140 degrees, I think it was actually 99 with the heat index. As someone from Iowa, that's sort of a balmy day. No, it's only 89, feels like 99. Let's get out there and play some tennis. But still, maybe you should listen. And USA basketball is a prime example. losing to France, which we talked about, kind of a big deal. I love hoops. I cover the NBA for CBS Sports, and you would think that I would be interested. And the wonderful people who run CBS Sports HQ wanted us to do a live TV hit last night at 3 o'clock in the morning Eastern time after USA-Iran. I made myself watch that game. I bet James Kelly didn't watch that game. He's here today. I bet Garrett Ridge didn't watch that game. Do you know why? There it is. Do you know who's on the board today? Garrett, drop as many of those as you want, buddy. Get in there.
Mm.
There you go. Because those guys understand that things that subtract from the sum of all human joy are probably not worth their time. That was one of the most brutal things I've ever watched in my entire life. I can't pretend, look, I'm no expert on geopolitics, but I'm not exactly the world's biggest Iran fan. I don't walk around rooting for Iran, generally speaking. And I felt so bad for that team. And it was such an ugly game. I actually wanted those guys to hit some shots. And if you want to get into the nuts and bolts of Team USA and whether they're going to win gold, still the betting favorites. We're 40.5-point favorites last night against Iran. I almost bet it. I mean, James is the actual gambling expert here. I almost bet the over. It seemed like a lock, and I could not bring... I'm going to go -40.5. USA won by 54 or 56. It wasn't even... It was free money that I couldn't... I went to bet. I'm like, it's going to be what, 29? -40.5, and they dominated. And here's what we saw, if you want some actual takeaways from the game. USA is the favorite. They're going to come out of their group, even if they're number two, because they lost to France. Doesn't matter. They'll be on the other side of the bracket than France, which is good news. And they shot 50% from the field on three-point shots. They shot 55% in general. They had a 50-40-90 game as a team. They made 95% of their free throws. And my colleagues at CBSSports.com pushed the idea yesterday. And I don't know who wrote it, so whoever I'm criticizing, I apologize, guys. It's all in the game. But can we get over the notion that the basketball, the different feel of the basketball is the reason we lost to France? The reason we lost to France is because international basketball is markedly improved from where it used to be. And we did not take that game seriously. And you saw it yesterday. Damian Lillard and every other guy hit bucket after bucket after bucket after bucket. You don't have a 50-40-90 game, even if you're playing Iran, and even if Iran is not exactly the world's most talented basketball squad, if the ball is actually the problem. So I've watched a little bit of table tennis, because table tennis is riveting. I've watched a little bit of USA basketball, and it feels strange now, doesn't it? Who's running to, what is it, on Peacock? It's where I watched it. Who's running to Peacock to watch the women's gymnastics all around without Simone Biles? I'm not. It's really hard to get into these Olympics. It's hard to feel connected in any kind of way. I'm not a water polo guy. I don't care about half the sports. I wouldn't even know what I'm watching in surfing. But normally, I feel a draw and to the Olympics. Just the idea of we're in this together. It's a shared experience. Go America. Let's do this. Here's my theory. Here's what I think is going on. I think the last year and change, made so many of us stuck in our homes, watching so much TV we didn't care about, looking for things to do. I'm just over wasting my time now that I can somewhat go out in the world and do the things that I want to do. Here are the sports that I'm interested in. I'm interested in the NBA Finals when they're going on. I'm remarkably interested in this NFL season. I'm interested in three baseball teams, and two of them are terrible. I'm interested in the Dodgers because I used to do some Dodgers radio, the Cubs because I'm a Cubs fan, and the Royals because I lived there and covered that team, wrote about that team when I was younger. Give me some UFC, give me some tennis, give me some golf, maybe in a major on a Saturday and a Sunday. I don't have the time or the energy for gymnastics, bad basketball. I have time for table tennis, Olympic tennis. I even like tennis. I don't care. Water polo. You were waiting on that one. You potted that. You put that baby up there the moment Ryder Rawl, he'll mention tennis. Freaking nerd tennis player. We'll get it ready. All right, Bill Ryder with you on the Jim Rome Show. 1-800-636-8686. Rome at Havitake.com, at Jim Rome. You can hit me up, Sports Ryder, Sports REI. T-E-R. Let's talk some baseball. Trade deadline bearing down. Some moves have already happened. Who are the buyers? Who are the sellers? Jim Bowden, longtime former GM, MLB analyst, colleague of mine at CBS Sports, CBS Sports HQ, is going to join me here on the program just after we get a CBS Sports Radio update from my best friend, Andrew Bogish.
CBS Sports Radio. Sports Flash. Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Bill Ryder on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, welcome back into the show. Bill Ryder with you, 1-800-636-8686. 1-800-636-8686. Rome at haveatake.com, at Jim Rome, jimrome.com. Sports Ryder, sports, R-E-I-T-E-R. It's go time in Major League Baseball if you think you're a contender or if you think you're a seller. Trade deadline bearing down. Names like Max Scherzer are available potentially. Names like Chris Bryant are available potentially. And there are some contenders. The Dodgers come to mind who need reinforcements. And there are some perennial contenders, the Yankees, who are in a really interesting position. So to make sense of it, we're going to go to former longtime GM, MLB analyst, colleague of mine at CBS Sports HQ, all-around good dude, Jim Bowden. Jim, what's going on, man?
Hey, Bill. Great to be with you. A really fun time. Loving this trade deadline. It is going to be crazy before it's all said and done.
I mean, we've already seen some tears, man. Like, you already got former Mariner, now Astro, Kendall Graveman. And I'm not making fun of the guy. Getting emotional. What is there a way that you're supposed to handle trading a beloved player internally, politically, before you do it as a GM?
You know, I just think the most important thing as a GM is to be transparent, be honest up front with the players. You know, if you can give them a heads up prior to, that's better than the big surprise when it happens. But, you know, again, as long as you're honest with the players, tell them the truth, tell them what's going on, normally that's going to have the best result from the player, from the media, from the front office. So that's how I always handle it.
Jim Bowden here on the show. Jim, one of the great scenes I thought from Moneyball, and the whole thing was amazing, is when Billy Bean's character, Billy Bean, in the film played by Brad Pitt, talks about how you tell a guy he's been traded. You get in there, it's direct, it's no nonsense, you get in and out. It's almost like it's not firing someone, but it feels like it almost. For you, when you or someone in your organization had to deliver that message, how did you say it? What was your approach to, hey, you've been traded, you're going somewhere else?
Yeah, I mean, you bring them into the office, and normally if we're at home and the deal is made, then the player would come into the office where the field manager and the GM would be, and we'd sit there and say, you know, we've got some news to tell you. We have traded you. And first of all, I want to thank you for all your contributions to the organization and what you've meant. If you meant it, of course. and say, you know, we try to make this deal. We think it's in the best interest of our team. And we also think this is a good opportunity for you at the new place. And the reactions are, you know, often very different. You know, I had extremes. You know, I had Deion Sanders who cried and almost retired from baseball, and I traded him to the San Francisco Giants back in 1995. So you have different reactions at different times. I've had other players that wanted to fight. I've had other players that appreciated the opportunity of getting traded to a team, like when I traded Brett Boone to Atlanta, who appreciated a chance to go to the Braves, go to a contending team. So all of the reactions are different, but again, the best play, just be honest with the player. Tell them the truth, look them in the eye, tell them, you know, why you did it, et cetera, and thank him for what he did for your organization while he was there. Simple as that.
Jim Bowden here on the show. Jim, Max Scherzer may be available. That is obviously a very talented guy and a pretty serious asset if you're making a run. The Dodgers are certainly in need of some starting pitching, which we would not have anticipated was the case at the start of the year. The Giants are contenders. I don't want to leave teams out. What do you think the market will be for Scherzer if he's moved?
Well, first of all, he's going to be traded, I've been told, this morning. So there's enough on the table already to know he's going to go. so between now and the deadline, it looks like it's going to be either the Giants or the Dodgers. Now, that doesn't mean that San Diego can't come out of nowhere and pull it off. It doesn't mean the Red Sox can't. But all indications I'm getting is it's going to probably be Dodgers or Giants. I think they're going to get a top five prospect back. Because, see, the thing about Max that's different than most guys that are going to be traded here in the next 48 hours is Max is a difference maker in October. He can either win you the wild card game, or he can win you a playoff series, or he can help win you a World Series, which he did for Washington 2 years ago. You saw him start the All-Star game. This is a difference maker. He's a leader in the clubhouse. He's a mentor. He checks all the boxes. You're going to have to pay it. It's going to hurt. You got to pay a price for him. No one else is going to get, I don't think, the kind of return they're going to get for Scherzer. But, for example, if you're the Dodgers, I think Keibert Ruiz has to be in the deal. And I think if you're the Giants, you've got to either put Luciano Bart or Helio Ramos in the deal. So you're going to get a top guy along with more. You'll get a top 15 prospect with that. But that's the type of return. And also remember, the Nationals might package Trey Turner, which would make it a much bigger deal. They also might package Brad Hand or Daniel Hudson with him as well. And the reason I bring that up is sometimes when if you can connect Scherzer with Turner, imagine the package. Because now instead of just Keibert Ruiz or Diego Cartaya, you're also getting Gavin Lux. You're also getting Josiah Gray because you're going to control Turner for next year as well. So, again, this is going to be interesting, but the Scherzer return will be the best that we see any team gets by the time this thing's done Friday at 4 o'clock Eastern time.
Jim Bowden here on the Jim Rome Show telling us, letting us know he is hearing Max Scherzer will be traded. And the Giants-Dodgers thing to me, Jim, isn't just interesting because they're in the same division and they're big-time rivals and they're both very, very good baseball teams. Andrew Friedman, who runs baseball ops for the Dodgers, and Farhan Zaidi, who does that for the Giants, are friends, formerly worked together in L.A. Does that dynamic, that competitive dynamic, the fact they know each other, the fact that it's the Giants and the Dodgers, do you think there's a chance that it runs the price up on Scherzer to the point where it's the most we've seen go for that level of player in a long time?
I think so, yeah. I would say so. I mean, because, you know, we're watching on the field, the Giants beat the Dodgers. I mean, they're ahead. So, you know, this is real competitive right now. And there's no doubt there's that GM rivalry between the two. The other factor you have to put in there as well is, remember, Stan Kasten was with the Nationals, has a relationship with the Lerners, which is mixed, by the way. And then there's the question, is Ted Lerner going to want to trade Max Scherzer to the Dodgers after they won the World Series in 20? Or is he going to rather have him go to San Francisco? And then thirdly, we got to factor in the fact that Max Scherzer's got a complete no trade, and he can really determine where he wants to go with his agent, Scott Boras. So if they sit there and they decide, I want to be a Dodger because I want to pitch with Clayton Kershaw, we're both going to the Hall of Fame, how fun would it be to have an October with the two of us in it? If he decides to do it, he can do it. He can just go to Washington and say, hey, the only place I'm going to prove is the Dodgers. That can happen. Now, so far it hasn't. All indications are that he will approve a deal to either San Francisco or L.A. That's what I'm hearing. I'm also hearing he will not approve a deal to some of the East Coast teams. So we got to make sure we factor that in as well. So that's why it's going to be fun. The drama's there, and you know there is a bidding war, a prospect bidding war that's going on right now. The Dodgers are in an interesting position because they have two top catching prospects in Cartaya and Ruiz, so it's going to be easy for them to put one of the two in there to start the deal and then work off of that. So, again, this is going to be interesting to the end because I think he could go either place.
Jim Bowden on the show. Jim, how do the Dodgers keep producing this farm system that just feels like year after year after year? I mean, you have Seager, you have Bellinger, you have Lux, you have Buehler, you have the guys you just mentioned who are prospects. Are they just spending more money internationally? Are they scouting better? What's going on in L.A. or with
combination of everything. They put a lot of money in development and scouting. They put a lot of money in research and development. They do a really good job of developing prospects, not just drafting them. They have really good minds. They pay scouts a lot more than most teams do. They have more scouts than most teams do. They have a bigger analytic department than most teams do. So they put the money there, and then they make really good judgments. Andrew Friedman's a really smart guy, as is Farhan Zaidi, for that matter. And I got to tell you, the job Farhan Zaidi has done in rebuilding a Giants farm system in 2 years is just remarkable. Like, if you had told me that he could he could change that farm system as quickly as he has, I wouldn't have believed you. And I think that's a story that's really not being written enough here in baseball. So Farhan and Andrew are two of the smartest people. When you walk into a room, they're normally the two smartest guys in the room.
Jim Bowden, last one on the Dodgers-Giants so I can bounce around. But if it were, and I know it's not the way it's going in New York, but if Brian Cashman were the best GM or one of the best heads of baseball ops in America and were dominating year after year and let his beloved, respected, really bright deputy go to the Red Sox and you turn the Red Sox around in 2 years, might be a big story. Are we talking enough about, do you have a perspective on the fact that, kind though it is, the Dodgers let Farhan Zaidi go interview for the job that he now has that turned around the Giants?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. But I think at the same time, I think in this game, we've organizations and the industry in general have never tried to hold people back from improving an opportunity for their careers and their families. And, you know, it's the last place you want for Farhan Zaidi to go is San Francisco in your division. There's no question about that. But at the same time, are you really going to deny permission when he had a chance to have full autonomy in running the Giants? I mean, I don't know how you can do that. So you had to make a choice at that point between Andrew and Farhan. And at the end of the day, obviously, they went with Farhan, who Andrew had hired Farhan. So they went with Andrew, which obviously was the best play there.
Jim Bowden on the Jim Rome Show. I'm Bill Rutter filling in for Jim. Jim, when the Nationals trade Scherzer, if they trade Trey Turner, let's say the Cubs decide to be sellers and move on from Chris Bryant or whoever else it might be. If you're fans of those teams, and the Cubs have won a World Series in the not-that-distant future, the Nationals have done the same, how long does a rebuild take today? I mean, can you look at the Giants and believe that's a realistic timeline, or is it more like 3 or 4 years for these organizations to hopefully get back to contention?
I mean, it depends on how far you trade down, right? It takes 5 to 7 years if you go bare bottom. So if you do what the Astros did to get where they went, the Nationals where they went, the Cubs to get that world championship, it was 5 to 7 years. That's the normal timeline. But some of these organizations that don't completely go down, you can do it a little bit faster. San Francisco did it faster, obviously, but they've done it with a lot of veteran older players, right? I mean, you had great years from Brandon Crawford, Buster Posey, Brandon Belt, guys who were already there. You didn't completely knock it all the way down. If the Cubs were to trade all four of those guys, Kimball, Bryant, Baez, and Rizzo, if they don't re-sign them in the offseason and decide to rebuild from scratch, it's 5 to 7 years. If they were to retain all four guys, then realistically you can turn around quicker and faster than that. So, but the long term, it's 5 to 7. That's the most. And if you can do it in 3, great.
Jim, who on the edge should be buyers or sellers this year? What teams like the Yankees or whoever else you're keeping an eye on do you think should make a decision one way or the other as this deadline approaches?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, you need to know where your team is and be realistic. You know, I think the Mariners are kind of in between. They're buying and selling because they're realistic to know that they're only one game out in the wild card, but they're really building for, you know, 22, 23, and 24 because they realistically know they're not going to catch Houston. So they're in between. The Yankees are like that. They're in between, only 2.5 out in the wild card, but they're not catching Boston. They're 9 behind them. They're in between, so if they buy, you can't just buy for a one-game wild card. If you buy, you need to buy so you're planning not just for this year, but 22 and 23, et cetera. The obvious buyers are Boston, Tampa, the White Sox, Houston, Oakland, the Mets, Phillies, Braves, Brewers, Giants, Dodgers, Padres. Those are the teams we know should buy. The teams that should sell are Washington, Miami, Cardinals, Cubs, Pirates, Diamondbacks, Rockies, Rangers, Angels for me, even though they're 5 out, they should be selling. Minnesota, Kansas City, Detroit, Cleveland, even though they're 5 out in the wild card, should be selling. Baltimore should sell, and Toronto should buy.
Jim Bowden, last question for you. Chris Bryant, former MVP, has looked pretty good at times this year. Do you think he's moving on, and do you see a fit?
He's getting traded. I don't see him going back to the Cubs either. I think he ends up either in San Francisco or the New York Mets by Thursday at 4.
All right. That is not music to my ears as a Cubs fan, but I will accept it because, you know what? That's part of being a Cubs fan, Jim Bowden. Things don't always go the way that you want. It's going to be a hell of a trade deadline. Appreciate the insight. I know you're a busy dude, Jim. Thanks for making time.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.
See you, buddy. Man, Jim Bowden is good at his job. All right, so a little news for you from Jim Bowden here on the show. Chris Bryant's it's actually the right thing for the Cubs. I don't like it. They should just tear it down. Bryant going to the Giants or to the Mets. Max Scherzer, though, I mean, that is a difference maker. That NL West is so loaded and so brutal. If you were to do a legitimate power rankings in a vacuum, not considering the fact these teams beat up on each other, the Dodgers and the Giants would be top two or two of the top three. And I still think the Padres are a top five team in baseball. And so the difference in and the weight on the scales that tip this thing one way or the other in the NL West and really in the National League, those are the best teams in the National League. They are. By I think, a pretty wide stretch. Is going to be decided over who gets Max Scherzer and how the Padres do or don't respond. I mean, Scherzer with the Dodgers feels incredibly unfair, but when you look at where the Dodgers are at, no Dustin May, not only no Trevor Bauer, but the report's out now, understandably, we should hit this later in the show, the Dodgers players don't want that guy back. Hell no, get him out of here. That tells you a lot about Trevor Bauer. A lot. And Clayton Kershaw, maybe in October, but he's on the IL right now. Dodgers land that reinforcements. Watch out, man. Buehler, Scherzer, Kershaw. And the postseason is going to be brutal. All right, I want to talk Aaron Rodgers. I was here filming in a couple days ago. Since then, there's been resolution, and here's what it adds up to. Aaron Rodgers dominated the Packers. He won. He got them. We'll talk about that next here on the Jim Rome Show.